Well, folks, here we are for our culture segment, and we get to welcome back Glenn Stanton, one of our own here at Focus on the Family. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, how are you? I like being in the culture section, being a very cultured person.
You are very cultural, so that's good. I hate using your title because it's Director of Family Formation Studies, which no one even understands.
Right.
So I like to say you're a marriage and family researcher for us, kind of keeping an ear to the ground. What's going on, and hopefully disseminating some truth around facts and figures.
Ear to the ground and finger in the air, just so that I can see which way the winds are blowing.
That's good.
You're exactly right.
Yeah. No, it's a good thing. Well, and you're a Bob Dylan fan, so speaking of blowing wind.
That is the
Wasn't
most
that a great reference?
Thing.
Oh, my goodness. I
that
just surprised
was
myself.
Very good.
I
that
totally
was
shocked
very
myself.
Good, but...
Oh, you know, but none of our audience will get it.
But blowing in the wind, that's pretty
Google
low-hanging
it, people.
Fruit
well,
for... Right.
Just throw me a bone, okay?
Yeah, okay.
I mean,
that was good. That was impressive.
Thanks.
Especially coming from a Bill Gaither fan.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure he has songs about wind.
Do you know that Bob and Bill used to hang back
no.
in the day?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I don't
Are
know.
Are you just making that up?
Yeah, I'm making it up. But it would be cool, though.
It would
Could
be cool.
Could you imagine them on a road trip together?
I know, a tour.
Yeah.
I think maybe it would be fun. So that, of course, leads us into the natural segue of divorce. towards divorce. Sorry that you get to be our divorce expert all the time.
No, that's fine. I'm probably more than you could imagine just
in this realm.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is good. We wanted to have you on the show because you actually, and you've mentioned this in the past, because I know you're pretty passionate about having correct statistics when it comes to various cultural trends and especially where the family's going and stuff.
We're born again, not born yesterday, so we need to get our stuff right.
Exactly. That's good. So you're basically, first of all, I want to talk about any time that largely in evangelical circles, I read statistics around divorce, usually people will say, okay, the divorce rate is about 50% and it's hardly any different for Christian couples than it is for the general market, for the population at large. You are saying, you actually take issue with that and you're saying that those stats are not correct. Where did that statistic come from and how long has it been around?
Yeah, what first of all about? Is the divorce rate is just as high in the church as it is in the world. Now, that is as often stated as it is just flat wrong.
Yeah.
And it came from some different sources. There was a Christian researcher that I won't mention names, but what he found out was that the divorce rate is significantly high in the South part of the United States, the Bible Belt.
Mm-hmm.
Ergo,
mm-hmm.
divorce rate is high among the church. But what sociologists know is that's not really the case. We could say instead that the divorce rate is high in the mobile home belt. In the sense of you have large population of lower income, lower education, got married very early, and that's why you have a greater divorce rate. It's a very simplistic kind of assumption that it's just terribly irresponsible to say that, okay, because it's in the Bible Belt, it must be the Christians. I mean, researchers who state this kind of stuff need to know better. But it took huge traction within the church. And one important thing there is, I mean, not surprisingly, if you just look at people who just call themselves Christians, me and my family, we've always been Presbyterian, no change in marriage or divorce rates there. But for people who take their faith seriously and imperfectly, just people who are like, you know what, I belong to Christ, I'm trying to follow him the best I can, and I go to church more times a month than I don't, those people have much lower divorce rates than the general population. And that's shown time and time and time again in the literature. Now, the other kind of myth is the 50% divorce rate. In one sense, that's very, very true. Absolutely right. And there have been a number of Christian authors, even lately in the last couple of years, who have said, no, the 50% divorce rate, absolute myth. It's never been anywhere near that. And that's not true. The 50% number is not a hard, specific number. It's not a particular measure. What it is it's a very sophisticated way of looking at future risk of divorce. Let me explain that. The citation should be, couples marrying today have about, in general, a 50% likelihood of divorce before their 20th year of marriage. So it's a projection. Just like the insurance guys could tell us, okay, Glenn, you don't run, you eat fatty foods, you never, get any exercise, things like that. You're expected to die at about age 58. That's what that divorce figure is a projection. Now, the real number, it's close to 50%, but it's anywhere between 40 and 50%, and some targeted about 44, 45%, which is the number that I use. So it means generally, people marrying today for the first time have about a 44 to 45% likelihood of their marriage ending in divorce by about year 20. But, Lisa, here's the big, big news. That number, 44 to 45%, applies to nobody. Hmm. And that's what's important to talk about today.
Yeah. Okay, so for the person who is like, this is super wonky, these are all statistics, why are we talking about divorce? Like on the show a lot, we have talked about the fact that many millennials specifically are delaying marriage because there's this certain fear around marriage that they can't do it well or they can't go the distance or whatever, largely because their parents' generation, the boomers, kind of are known for not doing it well, largest divorce generation in history. Where did those statistics come into play? Like, why were the boomers so, more than any other generation, kind of messed up? What happened?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because what I want to do is I want you to go into why there is hope. Please hang in with us, folks, because we're going to talk about why there is hope for those of you that are hopeful for marriage and you don't have to, approach it with
And there's great hope. There's great news. But to your question, very important. First of all, even from the colonial days, the United States has always led the world in divorce rates. Divorce rates have always been relatively higher in the United States than anywhere else in the world. But to your question, why is it that the boomers had a higher rate of divorce than any other previous generation? One of the reasons has to do with a sociological truism, and that is that generations are shaped by the generation that came before them. This generation today, like you just said, is remarkably pro-marriage, even though they're scared to death of it. They are remarkably pro-marriage because their boomer parents did such a poor job. And this younger generation is not saying, you know what, I'm so excited to be able to have the opportunity to divorce just like my parents did. They want something different. Now, look at the boomers. They came out of the relative social and familial security of the 40s and 50s. They saw their dad go to the office, work hard. They saw mom be faithful to dad, dad be faithful to mom. And they grew up in the 60s and kind of rebelled against that or just said, you know what, I'm not going to live my life in this quote unquote dutiful way. Maybe freedom in relationships, freedom in sexuality is not such a bad idea. So that generation was essentially the free love generation, the we should be able to enter and exit relationships as we want to be able to become better people. And so that was that boomer generation. And now their kids are growing up saying, you know what my number one wish in life is to find a mate and to marry for life and to have a happy relationship and to raise our kids together. Yeah. So again, we see that in that one generation shapes the other, and typically that subsequent generation is a reaction for good or for bad to what they were raised in. And that's exactly what we're seeing here.
Yeah. So you actually, to this point, wrote an article, "Your risk of divorce is likely much lower than you've been led to believe," which kind of lays it out there.
Yeah.
And in that, you actually say that there are many people who are marrying today that actually have a nearly zero risk of divorce.
Mm-hmm.
How
mm-hmm.
can that actually be? Who are these people? Am I one of them?
It's done through mirrors.
You know what? Your risk is very low if you don't get married.
You know what?
I was going to say.
That shows up time and time again in the research.
Yeah.
Now, and if you marry at like age 69, mm-hmm. your risk of divorce is just nearly gone. So you're just a few years from
And
only in my relationship, my friendship with Lisa, could I have even gone there.
Last appearance on the Boundless Show. We appreciate you, Glenn. Thank you.
Okay. No, the important thing there is, yes, let's go back. The 45% divorce risk number is true, but that applies to nearly nobody because of this fact. We all have different life choices that we've made that either elevate or lower our risk of divorce. Let's start with the first biggest one, and that's cohabitation. People who have cohabited before marriage have anywhere from a 50 to 80% greater likelihood of facing divorce once they do marry. And so if you are going to the altar to get married and you haven't cohabited with anybody prior to marriage, your rate of risk went way down. Okay, another thing is if you have your first child after you get married, rate of divorce goes way down. Now, you need to understand there's lots of people out there who have done exactly the opposite. They've had their first child before they get married. So they're skewing those numbers significantly high. So lack of cohabitation, lack of you know, avoiding having your first baby before you're married, marrying at a little bit older age, anywhere from 22 to 24, 25, that reduces your risk of divorce significantly as opposed to, you know, marrying younger. The other is couples who are married where either one of them has a little bit of college under their belt, you know, before they marry, mm-hmm. that reduces your risk of divorce as well. Hmm. Being sexually involved before marriage, those who come to the altar, virgins, or, you know what, you had a slip up one time, two times, they are significantly less likely to divorce, substantially less likely. So you've got all these factors mm-hmm. that are really many ways in favor of good Christian kids that do reduce your risk of divorce dramatically, almost to nearly nil.
Yeah. I see that there are a couple on the list, a couple lifestyle choice things as well in there. Like, for example, the choice to do premarital counseling.
Yep.
People that do that go in, you know, obviously not going in blind, not a Vegas wedding because you had a crazy weekend or something like that. So approaching it intentionally.
Premarital counseling. I mean, the research shows us that that reduces your risk of divorce by about 30% because that process, it's preparing you for it. But your premarital counselor will also help you be aware of some of the problems that might come up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very significant. You know, another is having common beliefs. You know what? We're both conservative, or we're both liberal. We're both Christians, but you could have, you know what? I'm Baptist and she's, you know, Pentecostal, and mm-hmm. you know that can create a little bit of problems. But if you have similar beliefs that you share, that helps significantly as well. One of them that I found very surprising was even smoking. Couples where one smokes and the other doesn't smoke, their risk of divorce is much higher, but couples where both smoke, their risk of divorce is high still. Couples who do not, that improves their chances of marital success.
Interesting. I want to circle back to age really quick. You talked about the 22 to 24, 26-year-old. What about moving into the 30s? Because I know a lot of young adults who marry a little bit later are like, oh, I don't know if this is going to work because I'm so stuck in my ways or what. Yeah. What exactly does stuck in your ways entail? And is it, I mean, is that a hurdle to overcome for them? Or?
Well, and that's a good question. It is a bit of a hurdle, but not much. I mean, the quote unquote ideal age, if you will, for, you know, marriage is like from 22 to 25, 26 years of age based on maturity. But after that, your risk of divorce is not increased really. Hmm. Nor is the maturity that you've developed a benefit either. But it does mean that, you know, and I remember my wife and I, we got married early, and the thing of is, well, that's not the way I've always done it. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're 30, 35, I mean, mm-hmm. that always is a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, just being aware of that, and in premarital counseling, your counselor can help you with that. Of, you know, there are things that you're going to have to be flexible with. And so that's more attitudinal than it is like, oh my goodness, I'm 30, I'm 35, I'm so set in my ways, I would be a disaster as a spouse. Mm-hmm. No, not at all. It just means flexibility and being able to work through particular issues.
Yeah. I think recognizing too, because the 30-something's going to be bringing in what we would traditionally term a little bit more baggage into the relationship, past decisions, probably past relationships, whatever, yeah. than that young 20-something. And so keep that in mind. So what, in light of that, Glenn, what would you say for single young adults who are listening? What is their best way? Like right now, like say they came from a divorced home, they're kind of like they haven't seen great examples. What could they be doing right now to most likely divorce-proof their future marriage?
Well, you know, first of all is decide not to move in with somebody, mm-hmm. To be sexually chaste. And out of that, you know, not have your first child before you get married. But, you know, beside all of that, I think one of the best things that you can do, I think even after you're married is, I mean, I've lost count doing radio interviews over the years. I've lost count of young adults who tell me I have never known a successful marriage, not in my own family or around my friends. I mean, that's just unbelievable, but I hear it time and time again. So if that's your situation and, you know, a successful marriage is like a Bigfoot or UFO sighting for you, go find people in the community and in your churches that have been married 25, 30 years or more, mm-hmm. and just say, you know what, can I be friends with you? Can I study you? Can I observe you? Can I just at least get security and confidence that this can work? Mm-hmm. And some of the best people, couples that you can find like that, are the imperfect ones. Mm-hmm. You know, because many times, like at a church, you see this older couple and they're like, oh my goodness, you know, you shouldn't study us because, you know, in year 22, he had an affair, or I had an affair, or, you know, we even separated for a while. And you have to ask, well, are you married today? Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, that means you succeeded, you know. Please help me know. Please help me and my mate, my beloved, know and understand how to navigate these things. So just because your family hasn't seen success or your larger circle of influence hasn't seen success in marriage, go out there and find those people. And a lot of them show up at churches, and go to churches and find people like that, and don't apologize, glom onto them and just say, you know what, I'd love to observe how you guys do marriage so we can learn from you.
Yeah. I would say it almost stands to reason, too. You know, you mentioned kind of the three big ones, cohabitation and sexual activity. And then what was the third one?
Childbearing.
Yeah. Not having kids. I mean, on the front end of dating someone, figure out if the person you're dating also holds those values. Because,
yeah.
again, you're not going to want to spend your entire relationship convincing them why you shouldn't be cohabiting before you get married. You know, so,
exactly.
again, it comes down to character and shared values, and don't waste your time.
Yeah, and it comes down to shared values.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, making sure that you agree on these sorts of things. And nobody's going to agree on everything, but there are certain things that it is more important to agree on than not.
Right. Yeah. Great points, Glenn. Again, the full article, we have it linked there on the blog, so check it out. Pass it along, post it on social media, and let us know what you think. Thanks, Glenn.
Thank you, Lisa.